Joe Torney Show, 97.5 The Fanatic. Hanging out until 10 o'clock. We're, the NFL now has released a story on NFL.com talking about the warrant for DeAndre Baker and Quentin Dunbar. This is nuts. Allegedly stole $12,400 and four watches valuated at a total. Is valuated a thing? I guess so. Valuated at a total of $61,100.
That word's not valued?
That's what I thought.
You would think.
But I guess valuated is like maybe an estimation. Let me look. Let me see what valuated mean. Estimating the worth or quality of something. Appraising. There we go. All right. That's good context by Joe. My high school English teachers would be very, very happy with that. Giants. No, thank you. Appreciate it, Tyler. We are aware of the matter, but we'll decline further comment at this time. That was the NFL. The Giants said, we are aware of the situation. We have been in contract with DeAndre. We have no further comment at this time. Seahawks. We are aware of the situation involving Quentin Dunbar and still gathering information. We will defer all further comment to league investigators and local authorities. Baker started 15 games as a rookie for the Giants last season. The Seahawks traded a fifth-round pick to Washington for Dunbar earlier this offseason. Wow. All right. As we said, more information as it becomes available. And there it is. Overall, by the way, to recap what we were talking about earlier today with the Eagles, I think that I feel better about this team, this 2020 version, relative to the 2017 version, just because of the championship pedigree, because there have been multiple players that have been added in key spots, just because, I mean, you look at it, this is a team that won the Super Bowl not that long ago. Now, it's not, people point to it and say, oh, this team just won the Super Bowl. That's not true. This team did not just win the Super Bowl. But it has not been that long since this team largely won the Super Bowl. In fact, after the Super Bowl, I was criticizing some of the moves, and part of the reason why is because I was saying that it's going to be the same team. You're going to be locked into the same team. Some of the moves, the contracts you're signing, Brandon Graham, Alshon Jeffrey, like, you're going to have the same team. You're not going to have the ability or the flexibility to kind of shake things up, to alter, you know, whatever you need to do. And so that's what I look at, and I think, well, yeah, it's the same group that won the Super Bowl. It's the same team. It's the same DNA, the same backbone of the group that won the Super Bowl. So for that fact, and probably for that fact only, plus I've seen not necessarily what I think to be Carson Wentz's ceiling, but I've seen what he can do when he's at the height of his powers, and that gives me a lot of confidence towards, you know, thinking that, hey, this thing's going to be all right after all. You know, if everybody's healthy, if Wentz is right, you know, all of these, you know, it sounds like it's a lot of ifs, and it is. It is a lot of ifs, but it's things that we've seen before. Especially with Carson Wentz lasting 16 games. Last year he lasted 16 games. It was the second time in his career. It's possible that things could all work out okay. But as a result, I would say that the expectations for this team, usually you would think would be higher than the expectations you'd have for that 2016 team. The addition of Alshon Jeffrey aside. 610-632-0975. Now, Tyler, kind of the same question that we were addressing during This Week in Pro Football for last year's version of the Eagles. Understanding that that expectations shift and everything based on what you do in the postseason. Let's say that they have a disappointing regular season. Let's say that they go 9-7. You said 8-8, so that'd be a successful season for you.
Correct.
But I think generally speaking across the city, that's probably on the lower side in terms of estimations. How many playoff games do you think the Eagles would have to win, or if any? Is a playoff appearance enough? Do you, what would the result of the postseason have to be in order for Eagles fans to say, all right, this season was okay?
Yeah, I think I'm going to have to defer to a Devon Givens-ism for this particular one. Uh-huh. You're going to have to see how it plays out and how the season finishes. If it is a back into the playoffs 9-7 type record like they had this past season, then I think getting there is probably enough. If it's a team that was up and down all season long and, you know, they're 7-7 and win the final two games and get in, they're going to have to win a playoff game to justify this season being a success.
Right.
If they're 9-2 and lose the final five games and somehow find their way in, they are going to have to win a couple of games, or otherwise everybody's going to go, you guys had this unreal start. You stunk for the last 5 weeks, and then you got steamrolled in the first round of the playoffs. This is a waste of a season. So it's really all going to be depending on how it starts and how it finishes.
You're absolutely right. And by the way, that is exactly why, like in particular, 2019 Carson Wentz, I thought, did a really, really good job. But people point to 2018 Carson Wentz. And they say, well, Carson Wentz completed 69.6% of his passes and 21 touchdowns to 7 interceptions. Like, what more do you want from the guy? Carson Wentz did not look good in 2018. The stats are what they are. I get it. But did not look good. Had the back injury, rush back, whatever you want to say. The eye test kind of betrayed Carson Wentz, I thought, in 2018. Coming off of the Super Bowl, coming off of the injury, had the ACL return, the back, all of that, right? I thought that's why I don't look at necessarily the stats. Similarly, you can't just look at the record. You can't just look at everything that happened. Or all of the box scores, I should say, right? Because what if they lose and there was an egregious call? What if there was like an egregious pass interference that literally took a touchdown off the board? Like, what if what happened to that? Like, for example, if you're the Saints and like the Rams missed pass interference that literally cost the game, you're angry as a Saints fan, but are you crushing the Saints for being like, you shouldn't have even been in that position? Probably not. Like, you're probably thinking that, you know, if the game is called fairly, legislated fairly, then you're moving on and everything's fine. That's just like a very specific example, but you're right. To quote Devon, or to borrow an ism, it does matter what happened, how it played out. 610-632-0975 is your phone number to join the conversation. You can also catch up on Twitter at Joe Torti at 97.5 The Fanatic. Let's go to Josh in Lower Merion next on The Fanatic. Hey, Josh.
Hey, what's up, Joe?
How you doing, man?
So the only thing I'm going to say, because you know what's funny? I actually always agree with you kind of more than like the Mikey Misses of the world.
Oh, really?
But I do. But I'm going to say
that's dangerous.
Thing. Do you know who else didn't look good in 2018?
Who?
The rest of the team.
Correct.
Because they had that Super Bowl hangover that we all talked about. We all listened to on the radio. And I'll give it to you. You know what? Carson, he wasn't his sharpest, but you do have to go back to the people around him. But I think that Super Bowl hangover factor was real. You could see it.
Like, I agree.
And even as a fan, I had it. If they lost a game, I legitimately didn't care. And I've never been like that. I'm the green face painted idiot fan at the game.
Yeah,
and when
but
they
Josh,
lost the game,
you,
I didn't care.
You probably said if they win a Super Bowl, I don't care what happens. I don't care if they have 10 more losing. You probably said it. So
well,
you just put your money
all,
where
we
your
all
mouth
made
is.
That deal with the devil on
yes.
the media, right?
Yeah.
We all said one Super Bowl and you know, we'll never, you know, and I made that deal. So the next season, you know what? And you know what? The one thing I will say to kind of does validate your point is the one person who should have cared was Carson. But if the rest of the team around him is kind of like, you know what, we got the rings, let's take a break, then
sure.
You know what, you can't put it all on him. But I will say, even as a fan, that year was probably like my most calm year of fandom. And I'm 35. So in 35, 34 years, that was the most relaxed I've ever been as a fan.
The 2018 season, of course. But yeah. And to your point, Josh, by the way, I thought that the 2019 weapons last year stunk out loud. Motivated, unmotivated, whatever. And I just thought Wentz looked better. So that's like one of the things that I point to with that season is like Wentz looked way better last year, I thought.
So do you, if I had to ask you right now, Joe Torti, on the air, I don't even know what time it is, you have to give me an answer, do you believe in Carson Wentz?
Yeah, yeah, I do. I do believe in Carson Wentz.
Me too. And I think that he has a lot more to show us than after the Super Bowl hangover.
Yeah, I think so too. My problem, Josh, is I don't know if the team believes that if they're taking a freaking quarterback in the second round. That's what my problem is.
Look, I don't either, but you get rid of Alshon, and maybe you get this quarterback and bring us all some water, and then I think we'll be doing all right.
Josh, have a good one, man. Thanks a lot. Yeah, that's a we separated. I actually do believe in Carson Wentz. There's a line in You Got Served, which you win the bet if you knew that I saw that movie. There's a line in You Got Served where Steve Harvey says, I've seen y'all whoop many a ass in this same place. I've seen Carson Wentz crush teams. I'm not worried about 2018 Carson Wentz. I'm not worried that Carson Wentz didn't win the MVP last year when Greg Ward was his best and most consistent receiver. I've seen him dismantle teams. I'm not worried about that. My main concern is like a shaken trust in leadership. If Doug and Howie and Jeffrey Lurie are signing off with the idea that you're selecting a guy who, I don't care what you say, Jalen Hurts is a quarterback of the future for someone, and you take him in the second round when you've got Carson Wentz, a guy who, like I said, I have seen beat up on people in the NFL and might just be a piece or two away from joining that elite of the elite, not Carson, but the Eagles. Joining the elite of the elite in the NFL, you take a quarterback in the second round. I have a crisis of confidence there in the leadership. That might be a show for a different day. Might be a show that we've already done. It's not a question of whether I believe in Carson Wentz, because yeah, I do. I do believe in Carson. I believe that he can stay healthy. I've pointed to Matthew Stafford as an example of someone who people said could never stay healthy and then just, you know, did. My problem is I don't like how the Eagles are treating Carson Wentz, to be completely honest with you. Regardless of whether he's saying all the right things, whether they're saying the right things, I'm looking at what they do. You don't draft a quarterback in the second round. You just don't do it. It's not done. Do you think that, like, doesn't it feel powerless, Tyler? Because the question, like, before was relevant. Like, do you believe in Carson or not? As far as I'm concerned, and tell me if I'm reading too far into this, I think the team's showing their hand already. Like, I think you take a quarterback in the second round, the team's showing you what they think.
Well, and that's the problem, too. We mentioned that a lot of people thought that maybe Jalen Hurts would be a third-round pick, and maybe he doesn't make it to 105, and that's why they took him at 53. I totally get their thought process of getting their guy. My issue is exactly what you just said. You showed your hand by taking the guy at 53. If you waited until the third round, and even if they traded up, right? I don't even know if it maybe not. Maybe if they traded up and that shows it too, because they moved up to get a guy in the third round. I don't know. But the fact that they took a guy at 53 from a position that we all believe as fans, or most of us believe as fans, wasn't necessary, shows to me that the team maybe felt that it was for the future. And that is the concern for me, is that I don't know if I'm ready to say they don't believe in Carson Wentz, but I am ready to say that there is a shadow of doubt for sure among the franchise, more so than there is among us.
You don't have to say that it's a coup or that they're ready to, but the only thing that is clear is, as far as I'm concerned, this is undeniable. Is that if they are rock solid sure about Carson Wentz, 100% head over heels, there's no way that it's anyone else, they can't take a quarterback at two.
Well, you would think, right? That they would be by have given him the contract this past season.
10 months ago. That's what I mean. And by the way, to your point, I totally get a value proposition too. Like, you get a guy that you think is very highly rated, you know, whatever. I'm uncomfortable with the term your guy or their guy, considering it's Jalen Hurts and it's a quarterback, but whatever. What it tells you is they had to have him. That's what it tells me. Like, if you're taking him at 53 with other needs on the board, especially, right, inside linebacker, we talked about Jordan Brooks going off the board earlier than you anticipated. Some of the other wide receivers are still lurking around there. I thought it would have been an interesting spot to try to trade up from 53 to get. I've talked about Michael Pittman. I've talked about some of these other wide receivers that I think are going to be really good. I have to think that 53 was involved in any kind of trade up for a top tier wide receiver in the draft, right? I have to think that that's part of the conversation. They didn't do any of that. That meant that they had to have this guy. That's what makes me uneasy. It gives me like the chills, you know, when I think about it. It's like they had to have him at 53. And that's why I don't like it. That's one of the things that makes me uncomfortable. If I am a Carson Wentz fan and I'm looking at the way the Eagles treated him, it's not like, oh, this guy just happened to fall to us. No, no, no. That pick could have been anything in any number of spots, and it was that.
Sure. And in a league that is so dominated, maybe more so than any other league of the Big Four, that is so dominated by the salary cap.
Oh, yeah.
When you have a guy that's making that much money, you should have faith in him. But when you draft a position, his exact position, that starts to put that doubt in your mind. Not only do they have comfortability or faith in him, is it if this guy, this other guy, performs to X level, right? 75% of our starting quarterback, 85% of our starting quarterback, whatever their threshold is.
Sure.
Are we moving on from the starting quarterback to get rid of that big-time salary to go with the guy with the rookie deal?
And we've talked about that, too. Do you draft somebody every 3 or 4 years just to avoid having to pay the guy the massive contract? Like, does a quarterback factory mean that they're trying to trade Carson Wentz? These are questions that I don't want to have to deal with, that I feel like a lot of teams don't deal with when they have their franchise quarterbacks. What I'm saying is, I miss the days when the Eagles were trying to convince us that Sam Bradford was going to be the franchise quarterback. And all of us were like, no, he's not. Sam Bradford stinks. We know it. It feels weird to kind of be on the other end, where the team is not really doing everything they can to support the guy that they have. And we would prefer that they do. It's like a very weird juxtaposition. I'm way more comfortable identifying Sam Bradford and saying, Sam seems like a nice guy, but there's no prayer that he could ever be a franchise quarterback for anyone. I'm way more comfortable with that as opposed to, you know, what we're dealing with in this moment with Jalen Hurts. And by the way, it's not his fault either. It's the Eagles making this selection in the second round. 610-632-0975 is your phone number to join the conversation. Especially considering, by the way, what Wentz did in the season, like during the season. It's not like, oh, he got hurt again. So, like, believe me, the only thing that I think is insane is if you're Seattle, right, and you draft Russell Wilson, because that's insane value. Like, Russell Wilson, a lot of people anticipated would be a top 2 round pick. Or a second round pick and fall out of the first because of his height, right? But they're like, you know what? We paid Flynn and we have Tavares Jackson here. He's making money too. The only thing that would have been insane is to continue down that path, like make a mistake by identifying Matt Flynn as your franchise quarterback and continue that by not letting Russell Wilson beat him out in camp and then start Russell Wilson. I get not compounding your mistakes. But Carson Wentz contract cannot be a mistake already based on what we saw last year and a cheap shot. That's what my problem is. He didn't do anything last year to show, wow, this guy doesn't have it. You know, that's what my issue is.
Well, and not only that, but then you look at Russell Wilson, who was what, a fourth round pick?
Third
round pick? Yeah. Okay, third round pick.
Yes.
Even in the third round, at whatever pick he ended up being, people I think would be able to justify taking a quarterback at pick, if the Eagles had 77, right, or 82 or something like that,
yeah, this is 75.
Way better than 53. It's just that second round number that I think is throwing people through a loop.
Yeah.
I think even to the point where if the Eagles would have said, okay, we're taking Davion Taylor in the second and Jalen Hurts in the third, right? If that's flipped, people would be like, who's this Davion Taylor guy, right? But they would have been like, all right, maybe they see something in him. And then, okay, all right, they got the best of the backup quarterbacks in the third round, right? They're not going at, they're not identifying Tua or Herbert or Love. They're not doing that. They're going to get in the best of the backup quarterbacks in the, okay. It's that second round descriptor is what people can't get past.
But taking Taylor and then Hurts would have had guys like you and me like, what?
Like, what is happening?
Right, because we're college football nerds, right?
But like the people that don't watch a ton of football or college football that are NFL fans could justify it going, all right, they took a linebacker in the second round.
They needed a linebacker.
Right, okay. Right. And then, all right, they got the best of the backup quarterbacks in the third.
And yeah, if because I don't like this quarterback crop after the first round to begin with. So, you know, if you don't like Fromm, you don't like Eason, you know, you like Hurts more than those guys, cool. I get that 100%. Like, that's something that makes sense to me, too. But I'm just saying, it's a hard, in an offseason where there were so many veteran backups available. That's a hard sell when to have a second round backup quarterback just be there for exclusively backup purposes. I have to admit that it just doesn't totally completely add up with me. 610-632-0975 is your phone number to join the conversation. You can also reach out on Twitter as well at Joe Torti at 97.5 The Fanatic. Got lots on the table so far and plenty more program to go. We talked about a potential Michael Jordan trade involving Julius Erving and the fifth round pick or the fifth overall pick, which ended up being Charles Barkley or not, as it were. Kind of conflicted information there, but someone who was there who knows called in. I think it was Sean, right? Newark called and cleared that up. Yeah, lots of stuff on the table. Obviously, with the Eagles, 2017 Eagles and 2020 Eagles in a pretty similar spot heading into the season. What are your expectations for them? A 9-7 projection is what came out from USA Today. Is that a successful season? Is that a failure? Understanding that obviously the playoffs rewrite the entire story. All of that and more is on the table. 610-632-0975. Denny, we're going to lead things off with you on the other side. And then we do have wide open phone lines. You could be next. It's the Joe Torti Show, 97.5 The Fanatic.
97.5 The Fanatic.
You know, we were talking on Tuesday, it's the Joe Torti Show, 97.5 The Fanatic, about remakes and reboots and stuff like that. Something that I didn't need. The Scarface remake got a director today. I didn't know that. Luca Guadagnino is set to direct the cult classic's upcoming remake, written by the Coen brothers. Italian director is known for his Oscar-nominated film Call Me By Your Name that won all the awards, right? Isn't that the one that won all the awards? I think so.
Not the right guy to ask.
No.
Got to call Pat Egan.
Pat would definitely know. And I'm sure that he's listening. We'll hear from him in a moment. I'm sure that we'll be able to share. Denny in Delaware is next on The Fanatic. What's up, Denny?
Hi, fellas. I'm from a different generation than you people, and I'm sort of upset about this constant greatest basketball player of all time, a fellow by the name of Michael Jordan, you know.
Okay.
It's been, you know, everybody on the radio is TV. He's the greatest basketball player of all time. They forget about a guy named Wilt Chamberlain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of people do. I feel like he flies under the radar for a lot of people in these greatest discussions.
Yeah. Wilt did everything better and more prolific than Michael Jordan ever did. I mean, you name the statistics, Wilt practically doubled anything that Jordan did. Yes?
Well, yeah, he averaged like 50 points for a season, didn't he? I mean, like, crazy.
Then he averaged 44. Billy Cunningham told him, we don't need 50 points a season. We just need you to do these other things. So, he would average 30 rebounds, half a dozen block shots, assist everything, so they won a championship. Now, can you imagine anybody asking Michael Jordan not to score 50 points a game?
No, of course.
He would laugh in his face, you know?
So let me ask you this. Do you think that people view Jordan the way that they do because of how many championships that Jordan won?
Well, that's absurd. First of all, the Chicago Bulls won the championship.
Sure.
Bill Russell should be the greatest basketball player of all time because he's got 11. Is that right?
Yeah. Well, he does, yes.
Yogi Berra is the greatest baseball player of all time because he's got 10 rings, right?
Who's that?
Yogi Berra.
Oh, Yogi, yes, yeah, yeah. I thought you meant Bill Russell. I was like, he played baseball, too? I had no idea. Yeah, okay, Yogi, yes.
Yeah. So that's an absurd statistic. If he didn't have Dennis Rodman, if he didn't have the other players on his team, he would be a nobody. He'd just be a big,
I can't go that far, Denny. I can't say that he'd be a nobody. Thanks for the phone call, man. And by the way, you're talking to somebody who despite not being of the same generation, does have a complete respect for Wilt scoring 4,000 points in a season. Like, you know, stuff like that. I think that it's crazy. And by the way, Michael Jordan had 3,041 in 1987. That's the only player before or since who's gotten 3,000 points in a season. But look, Wilt's a scoring machine. Iron Man. All that other kind of stuff. Shot blocking. Everything you'd want, right? You're not going to have me saying that, you know, Wilt Chamberlain's any kind of schlub or anything like that. I'm never, ever, ever going to say that. I do think that people view centers differently in terms of the skills that the centers execute relative to what the guards execute. I don't think that that means that different rankings are necessary. But why do you think that is, Tyler? Why do you think that people point to Jordan as definitively and decisively the best player?
A couple of reasons. I think the six rings certainly helps. The 6-0 in the finals, I think that certainly helps. The numerous amount of game-winning shots, I think that also helps. Obviously, the iconic image ones, you know, the flu game and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that, averaging over 30 points a game many, many, many seasons, I think that iconic is probably the reason that is what separates, I think. Because statistically speaking, he and Wilt and all these guys are all great. They're all up there, right?
They're in the tiny room.
Right.
They're in
that smallest of small rooms. Yeah. Right. So what separates for Jordan is what I just mentioned. The iconic game-winning shots, the iconic 6-0 in the finals, you know, 3 and then 3 more. Coming back and still being at the top of his game after that one season where they lose to Penny and Shaq. There's just so many factors that make Michael Jordan, to many, the greatest player of all time. The transcendency, I think. The revolution. You know, Tyrone talked about revolution versus evolution.
Sure.
The other day, he's revolutionary. That's another factor.
Well, for me, and I can't speak for everybody, and like you just laid out a ton of reasons. For me, the thing that differentiates him from Wilt is the next gear that Jordan had. Now, Wilt was fantastic 100% of the time, but Jordan conquered his demons, right? Like his on-court demons. Beat the Detroit Pistons in 91 after they got knocked out three straight times by the Bad Boys, right? Beat five different teams in the NBA Finals. Was busy beating Magic Johnson and Clyde Drexler and Gary Payton and Karl Malone and Charles Barkley in the finals, right? Upped his regular season scoring average by 10% or more than 10% in the postseason. I think that the in comparison, right, you've got Wilt Chamberlain, who, despite, I cannot emphasize this enough, despite being a fantastic player, lost to Bill Russell year after year after year after year in the postseason, who played his position, defended him, like, you know what I mean? Like, I don't get the impression that that Wilt ever conquered Bill Russell. I don't get that impression. And I don't want to undersell what I said about Jordan raised his scoring average by more than 10% in the postseason. So, like, the equivalent of that is Ty Cobb hitting .414 in the postseason. Like, that's like what the equivalent of, that's how good Jordan was in the playoffs. I think that's what sets it apart for me. Like, the playoff performances outside of teams, what he did that was different from what he did in the regular season and what he did that was different from early on in his career sets it apart for me. I do love Wilt, though. And you are very high on Wilt Chamberlain.
Extremely high on Wilt, yes. I think the dominance, and I'm also a big believer in the game-changing, rule-changing aspect of Wilt Chamberlain.
Totally matters.
Which is why I have such a high respect and hold him in such high regard, is just because of the fact that so many rules were changed because of the guy, and he dominated for a period of time where, I mean, it was like, yes, Russell was winning a lot of the championships, but Chamberlain, to me, was the most successful individual player of that time period.
For sure. Exactly. No one today is Wilt.
No.
But who do you compare that kind of thing to? Like that kind
that
of...
That dominance?
That dominance relative to team success and, you know, that sort of thing.
I guess the last person that would have done it to even a little bit of an extent, mm-hmm. and a lot of people will go as far back to say a Shaq.
Mm-hmm.
I think you could probably go a little bit earlier, or a little bit more recent than that, because I look at the way that Dwight Howard revolutionized the game in Orlando in his first couple of years and how they were a nobody team, and Howard comes along and they go to the NBA Finals.
Puts them on the map.
Yeah, I think that might be a good example of recent players mm-hmm. that do it, especially at the same position.
So, like, a different position player, stop me if I'm overstepping my bounds here. I think that there's Damian Lillard, who is as good statistically as you need him to be and will literally do as much offensively and defensively, but mainly offensively. He will do as much as you need him to do and just does not get, with all due respect to CJ McCollum and everybody else, the Blazers have put together some good teams over the years. Doesn't matter how good Lillard is when he's not getting, just not getting the help that he needs to put himself over the top of some of these super teams. That's almost the way that I look at it. Almost. And like I said, no one's willed. Not modern day, probably not ever. But I was thinking about that. I was like, who's kind of in that same boat that will do literally what, I thought of Russell Westbrook too. You know, when the Thunder broke up, like you would do the solo Westbrook Thunder teams were like, do whatever you need. Still just not enough. And Will did win two championships, too. Let's go to Derek, Northeast Philly on the Fanatic. What's up, Derek?
Yeah, hey there, Joe.
Hey,
and,
man.
Tyler. I had a question surrounding some of the logistics with regards to baseball returning now that we see and keep hearing about how, quote-unquote, everything is slowly but surely systematically opening up. But first, I noticed that the Eagles draft class, their numbers that they're going to wear officially
yes.
came out today. Like, Jalen Harris, 2, John Hightower, 82. So, like, someone my age, I think of Mike Quick.
Sure.
In a comical way, I think of, like, Clay Harbor, though. You know? It always comes to your mind, who wore the numbers when you see new guys on your team that you root for take them?
Yeah, of course. I thought Sean Bradley chose well. 54.
Yeah, 54,
I thought that was
absolutely.
Good choice.
Yeah, that's, what do you think of? 54, Jeremiah Trotter.
That's exactly,
you know?
Right.
I don't think you think of the late 80s with Buddy Ryan and Britt Hager. Know?
No, not first. Definitely not first, Derek.
Also, what's with the Eagles? They now have like three guys on the team named Jalen. Is that like the new hit, you know, athlete name? Jalen Hurts, Jalen Rieger, Jalen Mills?
I feel like that's part of what they do at the Combine. You know, Derek, I feel like that's part of their Combine interview is they want to know if you have any connection to the name Jalen, and if you do it skyrockets you up their draft board. I think it really does.
I haven't heard, you know, basketball. Now all of a sudden Jalen's a popular name.
Yeah, it's everywhere now. I don't know what it is. It's, and I know the waves, they do come in waves, right? But It seems like the wave is all on the Eagles roster. I don't know what it is.
Yeah. Anyway, on a serious note, though, with baseball returning, and it looks like, barring some setbacks here, they really want to make it happen. But if they have to have, like, new schedules because they're going to be in, like, regionalized schedules.
Yes.
As opposed to simply pick up where your normal schedule that was set out months ago picks up around July 1st through the 4th.
Okay, yep.
I prefer that. Just like if it's a strike-shortened year, you just resume play at whatever point you start up again. But to condense travel and a lot of the safety restrictions, I don't know. They're still going to play in empty stadiums, but will it be the spring training sites or will it be like everywhere around the country, first of all?
From what I've seen, Derek, and obviously there's a lot to work out, I've seen home stadiums. I've seen people playing in their home stadiums.
Yeah. Well, that's what I'd like to see.
Yeah.
I mean, if a stadium is open, right, Joe, you need at least a core stadium personnel of people to run it. So there's that many people that are going to be in and around Citizens Bank Park.
Right. Well, I mean, you need somebody to turn the lights on. You need the field staff. Yeah, there's a certain number of people. I would assume that everyone associated with it would be getting tested and stuff.
I mean, they'd have to. And then all the media concerns with people sitting in the press box. Mm-hmm. I mean, how's that going to work serving food? Will they have food? Will they just not? Will it be limited to a team's radio broadcasters? And that's it, essentially. I mean, there's a lot of these, like, intangible questions. As you get closer, probably will be addressed. But I'm curious now what maybe your guys' thoughts on how these issues will be handled.
Well, sure. And Derek, thanks for asking. Appreciate the phone call. What I would say, and Tyler, I want you to chime in on this as well if you have thoughts on it. All of those details, like you said, will be taken care of later. The thing that I'm concerned of, square one, is how many people feel like Blake Snell, where they're like, now this thing's like a non-starter from a dollars and cents standpoint. Because, like, that's not a small detail to me. Like, to me, that's, like, the terms of the work. And you negotiate that all ahead of time before anything gets restarted. You don't figure that out down the line. So that's more what I've got my attention turned to. Whereas, like, all of the other stuff is totally fascinating. But it almost becomes a moot point if a lot of players feel like Blake Snell does.
Sure, and I would say that the only thing that they could do with player safety and employee safety is with the way that things are progressing, you may be able to say, you know, a reevaluation in 3 weeks, a reevaluation in a month, a reevaluation, you know, whatever. The money thing is going to be, it's going to, if that tables. If that is like the non-starter, the league's not going to play anyway. So I honestly, as much as the player safety needs to be determined as well, the player money is going to be the first thing that needs to get solved if this league wants to play.
Could not agree with you more. Because quite frankly, virus or no virus, that's always the first thing. Period.
You pay to play the game.
That's exactly
right.
Other
way around. They pay you.
Right.
This isn't Little League.
610-632-0975. That's like the Albert Breer story. He talks about drafting the guy and calling him up. You know, and he says,
oh, I felt so bad for that guy.
Want to give you the $500 signing bonus? He says, I've only got about $300 now, but I can get you the $200 in a couple of days. That's rough, man.
You feel so bad for him.
Of course.
Because the guy's probably super excited to get there. He's like, I'll do anything I can.
I got
to
pay you what? Whatever.
To make this roster.
It's fine. Nah, man. We pay you. You're good. Tyler Julie's producing. It's the Joe Torti Show. Final segment coming your way next right here on 97.5 The Fanatic.
97.5 The Fanatic. The Fanatic.
Welcome back. Joe Torti Show, 97.5 The Fanatic. Hanging out until 10. Tyler Zulli producing. put a bow on things, more of your phone calls, and then, of course, one more thing. All of that is coming your way in, well, right now. So let's start things off with Chris in Overbrook on 97.5 The Fanatic. Hey, Chris.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Doing great. How are you?
Doing great. Doing great. I heard you guys talking about Will Chamberlain, so
yes,
I wanted to call in real quick. My dad actually went to Overbrook with Will Chamberlain. He was three grades below him.
Okay.
He actually went to elementary school with Will Chamberlain.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and he said it was funny because he was like, it was a crossing guard, or they called him safeties back then, if you remember. They used to call him safeties, and he always had his thumb in his mouth. They always thought that was funny how, yeah, how a big guy like that had his thumb in his mouth, how he'll help you across the street or whatever. And he knew him personally, helped him out, helped him walk to home one time after he won a scooter from the movie theater. Because they used to have shows back in the day. Anyway, he said he was a real good guy. Every time we crossed College Creek Parkway, he said, "Yeah, you know, that's where Will Chamberlain lived and all."
Huh.
And yeah, it's cool. So, but he said, he's still a big basketball fanatic, and he still is. And you know, so he's been watching basketball ever since then, all the way up to the present. And he said, Wilt was just so dominant and such a great athlete. And even today, it wouldn't, even against Shaq or even against, and he says people put Kareem against Wilt, and they put Kareem above Wilt. But he said if they were both in their prime, it wouldn't even have been a contest.
Huh, he said that Wilt was that much better than Kareem, huh?
Well, he said when they went up against each other, Wilt was at the end of his career, and Kareem got the best of him, but then Wilt came back the next game and just totally dominated.
Huh. Well, Chris,
so
thanks.
At that point in his age, but he said if they were both in his prime, it wouldn't even have been close.
Those are my favorite kind of matchups. Chris, thanks for the phone call, man. Appreciate the insights there from your dad and everything else. But, yeah, I mean, like, I think about that all the time, best versus best. We did that earlier today. We were talking about the Nebraska Cornhuskers taking on the Miami Hurricanes for the best college football team of all time.
You still haven't convinced me, by the way.
Yeah, feeling's mutual, bro.
Fair enough. It's understood. it's just, as long as you can accept that you're wrong, we can move on.
Well, I mean, here's the thing. I get that they didn't have to play the Miami Hurricanes in 1995, but when you beat the number two team by 50 in the Rose Bowl, I'm like, all right, I'm good.
Oh, it was a total beatdown.
The number two team.
Listen, I think we're probably in agreement here. In my opinion, the 95 Nebraska team is the second best college football team of all time. Like, we're arguing one and two.
Oh, it's so hard. Yeah, somebody's got to get that silver medal, you know? 1-2 finish, shake and bake. Is that a reference?
Talladega Nights.
All right.
There you go.
Just making sure everybody.
The real question is, who's number three?
Oh, my God. You don't even think that far,
That's
right?
That's what I'm saying. Because there is a real case for the 2019 LSU Tigers.
So they were the first team that jumped to my mind. Was it 04 USC?
Yes.
The team before the team that lost
the vacated title team.
Yeah. That's another one that jumped out. Clemson from 2 years ago? What was the best team?
The Deshaun Watson team or the Trevor Lawrence team?
No. The last Deshaun Watson team I thought was better than the Trevor Lawrence team.
Yeah, I would agree.
Yeah, I think that was 3 years ago.
Probably would have been 3 years ago.
Yeah. So.
Because Lawrence lost his first game in the national championship, right?
Right. Yeah.
This was his first college loss?
Yeah, to LSU this past year. And this is his second season as the starter. So, yes, that would have made sense. There you go. All right. We did that. Now we need to move on to the often imitated, never duplicated, the one, the only one more thing.
But there is one more thing.
This one comes to us from the world of Good For You. Tom Capehart, who is, speaking of USC, a former four-sport USC athlete, graduated college today. Graduated at age 85. Well done. Played four sports at USC on an athletic scholarship. Yes. Tremendous work. He fell a few credits short before he could graduate. Now 60 years and a lifetime of achievement later, he's finally finishing what he started. He could have signed out of high school with the Red Sox, instead chose to play for USC, was a member of the USC swim team, water polo, football, basketball. and he couldn't afford to finish. He was 4 credits short.
No scholarship?
He was on scholarship. His 4 years were complete. He was 4 years, 4 credits short and couldn't afford to take the 4 credits.
What year was this?
He went from 52 to 56.
So 56. I got to find out what a credit cost in 56.
Yeah, exactly. However, you know, he looked at it and he's like, well, this is what his son said. It was like a black cloud over his head. He's always, always finished everything. And now he's going to earn his Bachelor of Science in Education. We'll get to speak at the virtual ceremony. I'm glad that you chose the roaring round of applause because that is that's tremendous news. You hear about how difficult it is to go back. Think about the achievement there. At 85, that's not going to help you. You've already lived most of your professional life, I assume. You don't need to do this.
No, you're just doing it to do it.
Good for you.
We got numbers, by the way.
Let's do it.
These private schools like Harvard and Radcliffe would have cost somewhere between $800 and $1,000. State schools, which USC is and has always, by the way, been one of the cheapest state schools for in-state students, would have been, let's see, $675 for out-of-state, $225 per semester for in-state. So if he's a California guy, 4 credits probably would have cost, probably a fourth of $225.
Man.
What cost him about $60? A little less than $60?
That is... let's see where he's from, because we need to know this. Because that is... he is from California. Wow.
It would cost him about $55 to finish school.
Ugh. Couldn't afford it. Couldn't happen. So, good on Tom Capehart for finishing that off. Tremendous job. And I say this without a lick of sarcasm or irony. That is as inspiring as anything that I've heard in the last long time here. So really, really good stuff there. Also, very good stuff from Tyler Zuli. Thank you very much for doing everything that you do up to your normal standard, which is to say acceptable as far as
I'll try harder.
Thank you very much. Thanks to everybody who called and tweeted in, my co-host for the evening. Really appreciated your contributions to the show as well. I'll be back on the airwaves to join you and hang out with you on Tuesday. Devon and I kind of have this split thing. So it's me Tuesdays and Thursdays. Devon is on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. Looking forward to talking to you then. Until next time, this has been the Joe Torty Show. Everybody take care of each other. Have a great night, and I'll talk to you on Tuesday right here on 97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.